I was sitting in Walgreens with a sick child on my lap. It had been quite a week. First, our two friends who were visiting from the East Coast had gotten strep each in turn, and then one child got strep 4 days earlier. It was actually 5 minutes into Thanksgiving dinner when we learned that he had strep. And now my other child had strep, and it was a few days before the first Sunday in Advent. I wasn't sure what the way forward was. I just knew that I was really tired. And I sat there with my daughter on my lap reading Ivy and Bean for a long time while we waited and waited at the pharmacy when my phone buzzed. And I pulled it out and I read it. It said, "Strep, I'm so sorry." I had not told this friend what was going on. She'd heard from another mutual friend. She went on, "I have chicken broth going on the stove already. Can I bring you dinner tonight?" It was at that point that I realized just how weary I was, and suddenly relieved, I began to cry there in Walgreens. I knew at this point I could make it through that day. The disciples, they too are so weary. They have been called just a little bit ago. They left their homes and their lives, their families, to start this completely new thing. And I imagine they don't really know the way forward. They're headed through this field, and what is the way? They're exhausted, their feet hurt, and they're having a hard time seeing what's next in their eyes and maybe also in their hearts. It is hard to trust when you are exhausted and hungry. "Look," Jesus says, "there is some grain left for you to eat. That's for you." They go and they begin plucking some heads from the grain and munching. It's not much, but it's enough. It will see them through that day. And in that, they are attacked. The Pharisees jump, calling them religious outlaws. They're just trying to get by. And Jesus responds that, no, they are not working. This day is made for them. This day is made for them to be fed, that they may rest. The Sabbath is about resting, fed. Hear another story. There is a community of nuns, of Roman Catholic nuns, who live in Hormiguero, Nicaragua. It is a really rural community. You have to fly in a little prop plane from Managua to Siuna, which is itself a pretty small town, and then continue on these really rutted, muddy roads that really are only passable in an old army truck or on horseback. These nuns operate a rural health clinic. They host medical teams when they come from the States, but much of the time they offer the care themselves. I was there as an undergrad translating for doctors and med students, and when I was there, I learned that these nuns, these Roman Catholic nuns, regularly administer shots of birth control to the women in their community. I was surprised. I was really supportive, but I was surprised. And it's this whole ordeal, right? Because it's a complicated thing, birth control. Their husbands, for the most part, don't want them to take it. And so these women schedule appointments cleverly with the nuns. They leave their homes just after their husbands have headed out to work in their farmland. And then the women run and run miles, hours down muddy trails to get a shot in the middle of the day and then book it back home. Wash off the mud, make dinner, all hopefully before their husbands return. I couldn't believe it. One of the med students that I was there with got up the gumption to ask these nuns, so how do you reconcile this practice with your vows? And it was really difficult to communicate the question. But the challenge was not the language barrier. We had the right words. The challenge was that we were assuming a dissonance, a disobedience that they did not share. We made vows to this community, they told us. We made vows to care for their lives. These women, they cannot feed more babies. Their bodies cannot bear more babies. This gives them life. They were abundantly clear that this practice of giving out birth control, that this was an expression of their faith. And then we have this man with a withered hand in the synagogue. It is, for us today, a loaded story, a complicated story, right? With questions of ableism, what it means to be healed and whole. But come with me, try to hear it in that context. Hear that without a hand that worked well, this man could not work. He could not bring good things home to his family. People looked right past him. He was set apart. I wonder why he came to the synagogue that day. I wonder if it was to pray or to study or if it was just a place where he could rest without being bothered. But Jesus sees him, and the Pharisees see Jesus seeing him, and they watch, ready to pounce. What is he going to do? They are sure that he is going to break the rules here. And Jesus calls this man forward. He sees him and invites him up, and turning to the Pharisees, asks them, "What is the Sabbath about? Is it to do harm or to do good? Is it for giving life or killing?" And they are silent. He turns back to this man, asks him to stretch out his hand, and in that, without doing any work at all, he is restored. The goodness of the Sabbath is made clear in this man's body. He is healed. He's restored to his life to be able to work, to be seen again. It sets him free. The Sabbath is about healing. It's about restoring. It is about setting people free. So I've sat with all these different stories this week. I've thought about how, in so many ways, they are worlds apart. My friend with her soup, these nuns with their birth control, hungry disciples, this healed man. And yet, they share this common root, this compassionate nature, and I think they come from the same wellspring. at their core. My friend with the soup, she is really good at saying no, better than most people I know. She stops work and she leaves it there. She bought one of those maps with all the trails in her community, and week by week by week, over months, maybe more than years, she hiked every trail. My friend, she knows how to accept help. She has learned how to ask for help when she needs it. She knows that she is finite, and she lives that way. And these nuns, they work so hard feeding and caring and running the church there when most of the time a priest is not present. And they have this common life, these disciplines they hold together in prayer and in fellowship. I remember we would wake up not because our alarms went off, but because we could hear them singing and praying before it was even light out each morning. These people practice the Sabbath. And from that place, they can offer compassion. Jesus teaches us to live with a Sabbath mindset. Not just a rule, but an approach, a way of engaging the world, of encountering the people around us. He sets down, he leaves behind this rigid, unquestioning expression of Sabbath, calling us instead to engage, to discern, to practice. It is in the arc of his practice of Sabbath that he invites us, shows us how to live this Sabbath mindset. We are to keep the Sabbath, to hold fast to this way. We're to look for these ways that heal us, that feed us, that give us rest, that set us free, to practice them so completely that they form the downbeat of our lives, so completely that they fill us up. And then we discern. Then when we are fed and rested, when we are healed and free, then we can look. Who is hungry? Who is weary, unable to see the way forward? Call them. Bring them soup. Who is it that's stuck, that's bound, buried? Care for their bodies. Put your life on the line to bring them this compassion. Work with them for liberation. This is the good work that we are called to do, but it's not where we begin. We start by practicing this Sabbath mindset. Here, receive these questions, friends. What feeds you? What gives you rest? What heals you and sets you free? This is Sabbath. Start here.